of the Cosmoses Podcast, hosted by Justin Moses.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. This is episode number 28, and it features an interview with Junior Williams from the band Newtown. Today's episode is brought to you by Low Vintage Instrument Company, located in downtown Burlington, North Carolina. They have a lot of high-quality instruments there, including pre-war banjos, Martin guitars, and all your accessories. Find your timeless tone at lowvintage.com. That's LOWEvintage.com. Like them on Facebook, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. And you can give them a call at area code 336-524-6250. And they'll fill you in on all the info you might need. Tell them you heard about them on the Cosmoses Podcast. Hey, today we have a returning champion. frequent guest appearance here, but always pleasant, Sierra Hall.
What can I say? I just live right down the road.
The guest of convenience.
That's right. No. Here I sit.
And current viral video star from Facebook. Tell the fine folks about that. Made right here in the
Cosmoses Studios.
the facilities of the Cosmoses Podcast.
Well, yes. I happened to be at Justin's house, and he wasn't feeling well that day, so I was, Justin, I'm talking about you to everyone like you're not here. I was at your house, and since you weren't feeling good, I was doing a little laundry for you, like a good girl would do, and I just happened to notice, I was standing in there folding some clothes, and I just happened to notice, and I posted on the video that it was dryer. It's actually the washing machine, but it was a little too late once I posted it to try to change the info. But I really just noticed that your washing machine has kind of a bluegrass groove. And it was super fast, but it was like, and I was like, oh my gosh, that is so fast. And I was kind of patting my foot to it. I thought, I wonder if I could even play with that. And then I went and got my mandolin and started playing. And then I got cracked up and decided to just, like, record a quick little something of me playing with the washing machine.
And so you did the little video and you ended up playing a piece of Big Mon in it.
Yeah, just like, you know, 30 seconds of it.
And at last count, I mean, I've not looked in the last several hours, but it's had like 2.3 million. I mean, probably more than that now.
I'd have to look again myself. I don't know.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
Kind of wild, the things, you know, social media just sort of blew up on there. So,
yeah.
Out of nowhere, the most random things, you know, that people latch on to. And I don't know. It cracked me up. I'm glad it gave everybody else a good laugh.
Well, the two of us, we're recovering from a bout with bed bug bites. No transition whatsoever into that.
No transition from viral videos to viral bites.
Almost viral.
Almost viral. No, we didn't get sick. I just had a few. You had way more than me.
Yeah. And I'm going to preface this by saying let's not say the name of the hotel.
Oh, absolutely,
I don't want to disparage it because it's a nice hotel.
It was a nice hotel.
But
what, like 4.5-star hotel. And, you know, you just don't happen to check that often when you're just staying at a nice place. You don't assume.
Well, let me say that this is the third time I've been bitten by bed bugs.
Yeah, you've had it rough. This was a first for me.
In my musical career. And every time it happens, for a while, you're very vigilant. You check, you know, every corner of every bed. But then after a while, you get a little complacent and you think, oh, yeah, well, I've not seen any in a long time. It must be fine.
Well,
and then
never...
we got attacked. I got attacked again.
Well, I remember when you got bitten several years ago and you're still touring with Ricky. That was probably the last time
Yeah.
You got bit?
Both the other
times. On your face. Because I remember you had some awful bites on your face, and I felt so bad. And remember you going to the doctor over it and everything. And I had never personally experienced it. And I think around that time I started checking some, or kind of you taught me how to check for them and all that. But, you know, you stay at a nice hotel and you just don't think anything about it, and you get in some nights at midnight and you're tired and you're like, oh, a comfortable bed and can't wait to just get in there and get to sleep. So I guess we need to spare those extra few minutes to check for them next time.
Yeah. And everybody else, Ethan, Jason,
everybody
Ron
else
Block was
made
down
it out
there.
Alive.
We were playing in Lexington, South Carolina. I will say that. Mm-hmm. At the, what was the name of the church we played down there?
The Lexington Presbyterian Church.
It was
they hosted a festival, called the Midsummer Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Midsummer,
which
Music
that was
Festival.
Great. And of course, Cindy Morgan, great singer,
Cindy.
Songwriter, was there, and Ron and yourself.
You really got to work out. You played with everybody.
I played
a few, but you played more than I did.
With each act. That made for a long night. Like you say, I was probably tired when I got back to the room and just kind of laid down. But
you just go to bed.
Anyways, a word to the wise. If you're out there and you're traveling, check the corners of your beds, because you just never know when there might be a little something lurking. And as you said, long time ago, it happened to me. I mean, this is years ago. Several, as some would say. several years ago, I got bit, and I did have to go to the doctor because I didn't know what was going on, because I thought maybe I had a rash or something. Like, it was big whelps-looking things that were on me. I couldn't even identify them as bites. But the doctor gave me this cream. It's like a steroid cream to knock it out, and I still had some of it the next time I got bit, and I just so happened to have some of it this time too. So
that's saved us.
It's a good thing to have on hand, really.
But mine look just mostly gone now, but they're starting to look a little like bruises more than bites at this point. So
we're going to get to the interview with Junior here in a little while, but I had a few things I wanted to bring up this time. Recently, I had listened to several podcasts that I wanted to sort of talk about and recommend, and I shared a couple of them with you, too. We both listened to the Otis Gibbs podcasts with Mike Bubb. One was about Bill Monroe, and the other was Bill Monroe stories, and the other one was Jimmy Martin stories. And I think they were both great.
Well, Otis is really good at that. He's a great podcaster, so to speak. So I'd listened to a few of his podcasts before, but it had been a long time since I'd kind of tuned in. So that was fun for you to, you know, remind me about his podcast, too, as I listened to a lot of different podcasts. And then, of course, our friend Mike Bubb on there sharing those stories. And, you know, thank the world of Mike. And he's, you know, he's quite the storyteller, so he's played with pretty much everybody there is to play with. Mm-hmm. So that was fun to hear him.
I think if you enjoyed this podcast, you would enjoy those for sure.
Well, and I will say part of what made those so great is, you know, for us, me or you, either one, we didn't get to meet Bill or Jimmy. And
right.
So sometimes hearing stories like that is the only connection that we can really have to. It's the closest thing to actually having met the people, you know, is to hear the direct stories from people that did work with those guys. So it's pretty exciting and entertaining altogether.
Yeah, both of them have some great moments in them. And I also wanted to mention, well, the name of the podcast is Thanks for Giving a Damn, in case you want to look it up on iTunes or any other place where podcasts are located.
Find him on Facebook or something, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. The other was the Tim Shelton Show, which I've mentioned on here before, but he's had a couple of really good guests lately. More than a couple, but a couple that I'll point out that I really enjoyed the shows were one with Josh Schilling of the band Mountain Heart, and one with Jeremy Garrett of the infamous String Dusters. I think people that listen to this show You should check those out too. I think
I haven't heard those, but I'm gonna have to tune in and check those out.
All right, there's your assignment.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, I wanted to talk about just something funny from my own experiences the last couple of weeks. You know how, you know, we fly all the time, pretty frequently, and years ago when I started working with the Dan Tominski Band, I hadn't really flown all that much. I mean, I had a handful of times. You know, I've flown with you before that a couple of times. I've flown with Blue Moon Rising, I think twice, you know, before that. And so probably a total of under 10 times or whatever. But
now it seems like that's all we do.
Yeah.
Especially live on an airplane.
Especially this year, we've flown a lot.
I'd say this is officially the most air travel I've done in a year.
Yeah.
This year.
But when I started working with Dan, we, you know, Tim Austin was the road manager in that band, and he encouraged us all to sign up for every airline's rewards programs and everything. And so I did. And I've been collecting miles ever since on each airline. And if you don't fly on an airline for a certain amount of time, some of them let your points expire. And recently I'd gotten notices from Delta that my points were going to expire. I think I did from American too. Maybe it was American that I got these magazines for. And so there's this thing called Miles for Mags or whatever, Miles for Magazines. And so it sounds like a good idea sometimes to sign up for magazines, you know, to cash in your points and get magazines coming
free
to your
stuff,
house.
Free
yeah.
stuff.
Well, yeah, it sounds like a good thing. And it is, you know, I mean, I like sports. So I got Sports Illustrated and ESPN the magazine and a couple others, just other things. But when you actually start getting them in the mail, you realize, oh yeah, this is real stuff that I've got to find something to do with them, you know. So what about yourself?
Well, funny you say that, because one of them you signed up for is Time Magazine,
yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So I also got Time Magazine through some Air Miles points. But actually, so what happened for me is a couple years ago, we did that American Music Abroad trip. And we flew literally around the world, me and you both. And I think most of those points were through United or something like that. And I had a similar deal where I had a bunch that had just kind of racked up over the years. And I thought, well, let me look into this and see what I can get. I ended up getting my mom a food processor. I got a leather-bound Fossil watch and a subscription to Time Magazine. And, you know, so I was like, hey, this is awesome. This is great. Just getting to use these. And then now I'm still getting Time Magazine. And, man, they crank them out. They're giving, you know, every, what, 2 weeks maybe?
I think it's every week.
Every week. Yeah. I don't know. Every time I go to check my post office box, I got a lot in there. So, yeah. And it's, you know, usually some kind of interesting topic. But it's like when you've been gone for 3 or 4 weeks and you come back and you've got 3 or 4 magazines and then a whole bunch of other stuff. It's just like, where to begin?
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. I need some extra storage space now, basically just for magazines.
You have to rent
a unit just
for, just for your magazines.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention as well, I've got a new website, basically a new design. It's at justinmoses.com. So check it out if you've not already.
It's really nice. I like it a lot.
Got it set up through Squarespace. Thanks to you, in part. You recommended it, and I'm glad you did.
It's slick.
I think it's probably the best website I've had, and you helped out a little bit with the
design.
Well,
I lended my hand a little with the design here and there, but you know, I'm no pro website designer, but it was kind of fun. So thanks for letting me have a little, you know, moment here and there.
Well, that's something that I've sort of been doing since probably 2002, something like that. I used to be the web designer for Blue Moon Rising, and I've done my own website since then.
Dan Tominski?
I started doing Dan Tominski's right after I started playing with him. And there's a couple others that I've been involved with through the years. And I started out with just mine and my family's gospel group. You know, I did a little website for them. But I've never... What HTML that I know is totally just self-learned, you know. I've never had any formal training to do it, and the technology is always changing in certain ways. And
see, but even your lingo sounds fancy there, because I wouldn't know to say what HTML I know.
Well, you know.
Is this, I'd just be...
Well, I did immerse myself in sounds it fancy. Quite a bit for a while and try to keep up with what was going on. And the big thing with this new website is that it's mobile friendly for me. It's adjusts automatically to whatever you're looking at it on.
Which is interesting, because the website I had before we launched a new one this year was a few years old. And it's amazing how in a few years things change so much to where people go from looking at stuff mostly on computers to like now in just a few years, like everybody looks at stuff primarily on their phone.
Right, right.
So you kind of almost have no choice but to go there with it and mm-hmm. try to, you know, make it look great on there too. So, and yours does look great on there.
Particularly the store looks great. So if you get,
go check out that store.
Check out the online store. You'll have a good experience.
That's right.
Yeah. You and I played the Opry last Saturday night.
We did. Mm-hmm.
Just the two of us.
Which is, I think, how we confirmed we had bed bugs, thanks to George Gruen, who said, well, got some bites there. Looks like that's a...
He took a look at my arm and he said, that might need medical attention.
Yeah, your arm looked pretty bad at that point.
Yeah,
we weren't sure what was going on. Yeah. But
it's recovered. I'm doing just fine. But no, it was fun getting to play the Opry. I appreciate you asking me to do it.
Yeah, that was fun. That's the first time we had done it, just the two of us like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
folks, if you have a have the desire, can go back and listen to it at WSMonline.com. They have archives of the Opry. Hey, it's a rich archive of Opry shows. If you're interested in that, you could probably sit there for a couple of months straight. And if you wanted to do nothing but listen to Opry shows, and
it's
just
pretty
listen
cool
to those.
Though that they, you know, archive everything like that. And
yeah, definitely.
You know, there's plenty of things that, I mean, every time I'm in Nashville and out driving around on a Friday or Saturday or even a Tuesday or something, I'll flip over there and try to tune in. And occasionally, you know, you'll have a friend that gets to go make a debut or do something like that. You want to be able to hear it. And if we're gone and can't tune in or don't, you know, maybe we're playing somewhere that night, it's always pretty cool to be able to go back and hear kind of what you missed out on.
Yeah. And for me, I played with Ricky for about 3.5 years, and Ricky being a member, he played the Opry a lot. And of course, it's always an honor to get to play the Opry. And it struck me as we were looking back at those archives, how far back they go, that really it'd be kind of cool for me to go back and kind of check out a couple of the things I did with Ricky. Just again, the whole segment, just to hear it as it went down, you know. The two that stand out are the one with Barry Gibb, where he made his Opry debut with Ricky.
From the Bee Gees.
Yeah, from the Bee Gees. And then Peter Frampton.
Peter Frampton?
Right, yeah. Who also played on the Opry with Ricky. And it was really cool to get to play with both of those guys out there.
Yeah. Well, and I'll point out, too, part of what I thought was special about getting to play the Opry just the two of us, if in the live show quite a bit, we have played a fair amount of mandolin duets.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the first time we had actually played two mandolins on the Opry stage like that. So, and I guess so. Oh, and you played guitar with me. We did Best Buy, and so you played mm-hmm. guitar on that one. So that was... That was neat for me, just thinking about how many times you had played it and the fact that, you know, you played banjo and dobro some with Ricky and, you know, played fiddle with whoever. I know you've probably Ricky, and I know you filled in with people like Rhonda Vincent before doing that. Or, of course, Dan Tominski Band, right, you played fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know.
So I've played basically every...
You've played all your instruments except for bass.
Yeah.
You have to do a bass duet with Ethan next time. I'll just leave the stage.
Yeah.
So, pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. One other thing I want to hit on here is that I got a question from Brent Herbeck, a listener of the show. I always love getting in good questions, and I encourage you to keep sending them in to justin@justinmoses.com. And I encourage you, as always, to please subscribe on iTunes, rate and review the show. It's very easy, isn't it?
Oh, it's super easy. I mean, and I do that a lot with, you know, things I listen to a lot. To be honest, I won't say I write reviews too often, but I do go on there and give my star rating, especially if it's something that I really enjoy listening to, because I do know how important that is for, you know, for the people that are putting on the podcast, and to be able to get it to, you know, be noticed by iTunes and to be able to, you know, show up on the charts. So I encourage people to do that for your podcast. If you like it, why not? It only takes a second. Go on there and say, I love it.
All right, now for the question, here's what Brent says. Do you think that there is something inherent in good music that makes it good? Or do you think that what makes music, quote, good, is simply subjective based on the listener? Hopefully that makes sense. I don't necessarily mean specific to a genre. I'm thinking more about how music connects to people in a fundamental way. I'm curious to hear your thoughts, or maybe ask the question sometime if you think that would make for an interesting discussion, which I do, and I'm posing that question toward you.
Well, I think that's a hard one to give a straight answer on in some ways. That's part of the beautiful thing about music, is that there's always going to be things about it that I find good, that you know, that I love, things about, you know, different kinds of music that you love. We could listen to the same thing, and there might be something that you like about it that wouldn't be the thing I would point out as liking about it. But I do think there are some things that most people could agree on as being quote-unquote good or quote-unquote bad, you know. There are certain fundamentals to, you know, just like anything, in playing music, to be able to, you know, have technique or have a certain level of skill as a singer or as a musician, you know, that therefore can make the music better, you know, noticeably better. So I do think in some ways, yes, there are some things that make things fundamentally good.
Yeah, can you identify any of the traits that you would say makes music good?
Well, okay, sure. You know, you and I've had this discussion a bunch, you know, without specifically like thinking of a particular artist or something, but I know there's been plenty of times that I may say, man, I really love this person, and, you know, or you may say, oh, I really love this, and one of us would say, well, I can appreciate the skill level that person has. Like, you may hear a singer that sings in great pitch, great tune, can really use their voice, has a particular, you know, sound and style that's kind of undeniably good. It may not be something that is up your alley taste-wise. It may not be the thing you want to put on and listen to every day. But there are some, you know, vocalists or musicians that you hear them play, and their skill level, their ability to do what they're doing is at a really high level, that to say it's not good, to me, in a way, just seems like a silly statement. To say it's not good, it may not be.
But doesn't that depend on the person listening's ability to perceive that, though?
I'm sure, yeah, because everybody has different, you know, levels of listening, for sure. But I'm just speaking for myself, you know, personally, for the most part, you know, because that's the only point of view I can have.
Right.
But I, you know, most people, though, I think, can identify when somebody's really got something special, even if they don't know why. You may disagree with that. You may disagree with that. But I do think, like, for the most part that, you know, if somebody has a certain level of skill, you might say, well, that's not really my thing. That's not what I enjoy listening to. But there's, you know, A, B, and C that kind of makes you go, that person is way talented and good at what they do, whether you like it or you don't.
What would A, B, and C be, though?
Well, like I was talking about, being a singer, for instance, that has extremely good pitch or really great phrasing or, you know, has the ability to sing. Like, for instance, there's a lot of singers I know, like sometimes I'm not way into, and it depends on the style, you know, but I'm not always like singers that sing just runs for days and days and days just kind of cause they can, for example. Sometimes that wears me out a little bit as a listener to like hear that over and over and over. But then again, there are some singers that somehow there's something about their voice that they kind of can get away with doing it. It seems very sincere coming from, you know, that person. But even if I go, okay, well, I don't really connect with how much they're doing that, I still might go, I'm impressed with their ability to do that, and they're really good at doing that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's an interesting topic. I'm not sure that, I mean, we could probably talk around in circles, you know, for a long time about it and maybe not ever directly answer the question, because obviously I think if I read things right, I probably think a little bit more on the side of interpretation of a listener, and you think a little bit more that it's defined, but we both, I wouldn't put it at 100% that way. And I don't think you would put it 100% the other way. Right.
Well, because it is absolutely dependent, too, on what the listener has the ability to hear.
Yeah.
And I think the more you listen to music, the more you value, you know, music in a certain sense of it being part of your life and your daily, you know, there's a difference in casual listening and, like, deep listening and really, really, really sitting down with an album and paying attention and, you know, that kind of stuff that really helps develop your ability to listen to music. Like, I think I told you we were listening to something the other day, and it's exciting to hear something that I heard years ago, but I feel like now as I grow as a musician and as I get older and have more years of just listening to music, I'm able to hear things at a deeper level than I used to be able to. And it's kind of a special thing to, like, feel that growth even in your listening, you know, and be like, wow, I never heard it like that before, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely. It's dependent on your ability to hear music a certain way, and that's going to always be different for different people.
I saw something really cool that Ron Block said at one point, and I can't remember what platform he said this on or whatever, but I just remember it coming from him, that he was saying that, like, okay, take Stuart Duncan and take a beginner fiddler. Well, there's no question. It's not subjective that Stuart Duncan is better than this beginner fiddle player. And I agree with that. But to his question, again, even talking about to the point where music moves you, I think if we could put our finger on the elements that made music good, that touched people across the board, I think we would go for that and make that music, you know, just to reap the benefits, if nothing else, for short term, and then make whatever music you want to make later. But
Well, you just said something there, though, that I feel like is worth pointing out. You said what moves people.
Mm-hmm.
That's more subjective to me than saying what is good. If we're talking about what's good, what's technically good. Mm-hmm. Like, there are some things from a technical standpoint that I feel like are, you know, pretty easy to point out
with definitely.
Musicians and singers, you know? Uh-huh. But, like, what, you know, what moves people can sometimes be a completely different thing. you know? Yeah. I mean, and it's not always even just about the artist. It could be about somebody's songwriting is so strong that when they deliver a particular song, that they've written, there's something about it coming from that person, whether they're an amazing vocalist or musician or whatever, that can be really powerful sometimes. I mean, I remember hearing, I was somewhere and I heard You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive, that song. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me pretty hardcore because I heard this person sing this song. And it was, I forget even where I was, but, you know, if I'm being honest, the vocal delivery of it was not that good. I mean, it was like pitchy and it just, you know, in some ways was a little bit yelled. But I was really moved all at the same time. And I went, this is very interesting because really in no way was I saying, man, that person is singing great. Or man, that person, it really had nothing to do with that person at that point. I just went, now that is a good song. A song that has given me goosebumps with a delivery that's not very strong of the song itself, but this song is really shining through as a special thing. Mm-hmm. So it's not always easy to put a finger on what it is that moves us, because that's different for different people, I think. But from a what is technically good, it depends on what your question is. There are things, in my opinion, that are very obvious.
I think if we go back to the question itself, meaning in what moves you, basically. He said what's good, but here at the end it says, I don't necessarily mean specific to a genre. I'm thinking more about how music connects to people in a fundamental way. So I think he sort of meant, you know, good as in it makes me feel a certain way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that means something completely different to every single person. I mm-hmm. mean, there are a lot of really good technical musicians that don't have the feeling in their playing or singing that somebody who maybe just knows a few chords and can only sing a few songs could, you know, could do it in the most sincere way that it really can just move everybody in the room. It mm-hmm. means something. So, it definitely depends on each individual situation, you know, when you're talking about feeling and, you know, what moves you, and nobody can argue with you on that. There is no, you know, you're going to tell me that doesn't move me if it does? I mean, that's stupid. It's like,
you know. Well, you mentioned Harlan, so let's transition into talking about today's guest. I have Junior Williams. We conducted this interview a couple of weeks ago on the phone, and we talk a lot about their new record, Harlan Road, and I'll mention it to you because you just recently took a listen to the album.
I did, yeah. I got to listen to it. They asked me to write a quote and for them, and I've been enjoying it, listening to it. Yeah, they're a talented bunch of folks that I've, you know, kind of known I've known Katie and Junior a little bit, just, you know, through meeting them here and there. And then, of course, Mitchell Cannon, the mandolin player in that band, has been one of my brother's best friends. And so I've got to know Mitchell through him, a talented mandolin player. And, of course, I'm trying to think of who else I've met. I don't guess I've met the guitar player yet. Mm-hmm. And then Travis, the bass player, you know, we know from his days back with the Carrie Hassler band. So, you know.
And,
good
well,
group.
I played in a band with Junior on and off for a few years there. I started kind of gigging a little bit with Newfound Road in probably 2005 and played on and off with him basically until he left to join Newtown, or, you know, the Katie Penn band at the time, which turned into Newtown. And their record's called Harlan Road.
Produced by my old producer buddy, Barry Bells.
That's right, yeah. We get into that too, so.
Good.
We'll get into the interview now with Junior Williams, but thanks a lot for coming over and being a part of this intro to this interview.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. Thanks for my tasty white grape juice I've been drinking. And I look forward to hearing the interview.
All right. Here it is, Junior Williams.
Welcome to the Cosmoses Podcast.
It's a great pleasure, my friend. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah. How's everything been going?
Busy. It's getting busy.
Yeah.
After a record comes out, you know, it's CD release parties, and now you got to learn the material because you have to start staging it. So
yep.
It's been a busy few weeks.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that record. What's the title of the new record y'all have out?
It's called Harlan Road, and it's on Mountain Home Records.
Uh-huh. And had some production help there with a certain friend of mine, right?
Yeah, I guess. He did okay.
Yeah.
He did okay. Barry Bells is one of the finest, well, you know, bass players in the whole world. Spending, you know, years and years and years with Allison, and just all the other stuff that he's done in his career. I know you spent some time on the road with him and the Dan Band, the DTB.
Yep.
And, he was just fantastic. So easy to work with and just had so many great ideas, and he did a fantastic job. We're so tickled to have had him come in and put his spin on stuff.
Yeah. Tell us about the songs you chose to put on this record.
Well, it was mainly Katie. She did some research. We had some songs that had presented themselves to us over a period of years, and we started looking for some material a couple of years ago, and a couple of fellas that were in the band at the time had to make exits from us, and it kind of threw us into a tailspin at first, but then Katie got to researching along with our former guitar player, C.J. Kane, who wrote, I think C.J. has two songs on this record, but she found a young man in Eastern Kentucky, Tyler Childers, who is very well known in this part of the country, Central Kentucky, West Virginia area, and he wrote, I think, four tunes on this record. Harlan Road is the title cut. He also wrote, and I'm going off the top of my head, Hard Times. He wrote a song called The Heart You've Been Tending, and he wrote a song called The Crows and the Jakes, which are tunes that he performs around here. I don't think they've been recorded yet, except by us, but he's one of the finest young songwriters to come along in a long time.
Yeah.
CJ has a couple of things on the record. We have a song from Sarah Siskin. John Weisberger and Jeremy Garrett wrote a song for us a few years ago called Come Back to Me. And just now we decided to put it on this record. It just seemed right. The song contents or the lyrical contents from the other songs. And then this one, it all just kind of fell into place. Really good story songs. And Katie and I do it as a duet. And it turned out to be a really great team. We're just really excited about it.
Yeah, and you got some shows coming up. This podcast it won't come out before it happens, but you're playing at the Station Inn tomorrow night, right?
Tomorrow night, yeah. June, is that 28th?
Yeah.
Yeah, 28th. We're at the Station Inn doing a city release party, and then back here in Lexington the 29th on Saturday at a place called Willie's Locally Known, which is a great venue here in Lexington. We'll be doing a city release party there, and then we've got some shows coming up. I don't exactly know where. I'd have to go on the website and look at them.
Yeah.
To see where we're going to be playing. But the fall's getting busy. Of course, we'll be at IBMA doing some stuff. And we'll be all over the place. It's looking like a very busy fall for us.
Absolutely. Well, tell us how you got started in this whole business of music.
Well, you want to go back that far, I started singing in church when I was five.
Yeah.
Started playing guitar when I was six. You know, grew up in church like a lot of bluegrassers. Grew up in church singing. The first band I really played in, I was 21 years old. I started playing with a group called the Bishops, who were a gospel group from Richmond, Kentucky, for several years. Traveled around the country with them. 2001, Tim Shelton, Rob Baker, Tim Caudill, and myself formed Newfound Road. I was with them. 2009, I left the band and kind of played with my wife, Katie Penn. I played in her band a few times and then just made that, you know, natural progression into her group. She changed the name from the Katie Penn Band to Katie Penn in Newtown and then just dropped her name altogether and it just became Newtown, I think, in 2012. I've been playing a long time, traveling all over the country, playing different types of music, but bluegrass was always something growing up that I heard around the house, Stanley Brothers, you know, Bill Monroe, Frank Scruggs, grew up listening to all that stuff and just loving it.
Yeah, so you had that music in your early days? You listened to bluegrass as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the first music I ever listened to was the Stanley Brothers. Dad was a big Stanley Brothers fan. And, I listened to Ralphie Carter and George Shuffler, you know, and just learned the same tenor by listening to Ralph. And I don't think there's a better mountain-style tenor singer in the world than, you know, Ralph Stanley. Sadly, lost Ralph very recently, but my goodness, what an impression he's made on the music industry overall.
Yeah.
But for bluegrass, just that, you know, just that heartfelt soul sound that he had, you know, was at times heartbreaking. Mm. But that's what, you know, that's kind of stuff I grew up listening to and trying to emulate his singing and George Shuffler's guitar playing. And it's always been something that's driven inside of me to play and sing bluegrass.
Well, when you were with the Bishops, did you play mostly guitar, or what was your instrument in that situation?
Primarily, it was electric bass.
Oh, yeah.
Oddly enough. Yeah. I mean, oddly enough, when I first joined the group, it was guitar. And then later on, I left the group and then rejoined the group in 96. And it was primarily bass guitar. It was electric bass. Okay. And then the guitar was introduced for a couple of songs. And then Mark Bishop, one of the brothers, decided he wanted to write a song with a mandolin on it. Well, I'm not a mandolin player at all, but I purchased a mandolin and began to work on, you know, what needed to be done. And then the banjo was introduced, and then I played electric guitar on some things. So at one time, I had a music store set up behind me. I had five instruments that I used almost nightly. And I'm not good on any of them, but I just, you know, I just got away with it.
Oh, that's not true, man. You're a great player.
I'm average at best.
Tell us who some of your bigger influences are on some of those instruments. You know, I know you, when I played with you at Newfound Road, you played guitar and banjo, mostly banjo, but some guitar too. Who are some of your biggest just musical influences?
Oh, gosh. Of course, I mean, you can't say you play banjo without listening to Earl Scruggs. And
right.
You know, at the time, you know, I was just, when I started with Newtown Road, I played banjo a little bit, but I really didn't have all it meant directly. I fumbled with the forward roll, and, you know, I was self-taught, so I learned all the wrong things to do, unfortunately. So you steered me into the right, you know. You and Terry Balcom, Dale Perry were, I'll use the word, instrumental in getting me the right material to listen to. And of course, it was, you know, Earl Scruggs. And I'm a big Sheeler fan. I'm a big Bela Fleck fan. I would love to learn some of the stuff that, that he played. But listening to Earl and Sammy, listening to Terry Balcom play, those guys really helped me a lot. And yourself, I mean, you're an incredible musician, and you helped me a lot in finding those things that weren't exactly correct in my playing and helped me along in learning how to do it correctly.
Well, you know,
so you were an influence, brother.
Well, I still say that there's not a necessarily a right and wrong way of doing something, but within the style of Scruggs, you know, like if you study his playing, like I there's many things that I can still learn. You know, I'm sure because I've listened to a lot of it and I try to do it, but that doesn't mean that by no means, you know, do you ever become an expert or something. You know, like I always think there's things to learn, and like I say, I don't think there's necessarily a wrong way, but there's multiple different ways, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it was just some things that I wasn't as fluid as I needed to be in my forward role.
Yeah,
I was doing some forward and backward roles, you know, mixing them up together, and it just didn't sound as fluid as it needed to sound. And as you know, when Scruggs played, man, it was just drive.
Yeah.
It was drive. It was from the opening notes, it was nothing but drive. Well, my playing lacked some of that because that forward row wasn't present throughout the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And Terry Balcom even told me once, he said, man, I like your playing. He said, it's not. And I said, well, you know, I want to play like Scruggs. He said, man, nobody plays like Scruggs.
Uh-huh.
He said, nobody can do that. He said, that was Scruggs. He said, you know, and I said, well, I'm doing it wrong. He said, no, man, you're just doing it different.
Uh-huh.
And I understand that. I understand that completely. But if I were giving advice to someone who is learning to play banjo, and I think you told me as well, Foggy Mountain Banjo, get that record.
Mm-hmm.
Get that record and listen to it over and over and over, because it shows you, it lays it out plainly how Scruggs plays that forward roll, how he uses his thumb to play a lot of the lead notes.
Mm-hmm.
That I still struggle with sometimes. J.D. Crowe was a guy that I didn't mention that, my goodness, I definitely should, because He was a big influence in some of the stuff that I've learned recently. But, you know, I would just tell folks, get that Foggy Mountain Banjo record and listen to it, play along with it. It'll open up your playing. It'll open your eyes to the way that you want to approach banjo.
Mm-hmm.
How that forward roll is so instrumental and how you approach banjo and how it creates that drive, that forward momentum that just keeps it chugging along like a train.
Uh-huh. Well, tell us, what about guitar? Are there people you can cite that influence your guitar playing?
Oh, George Scheffler was the first guy that, yeah, I really listened to with the Stanley Brothers. And then Larry Sparks, I began to listen to Larry as I was getting into my teens. And he was hot as a pistol back then. That's a long time ago, maybe before you were born. And he was a big influence for a long time. And then, of course, I learned who Tony Rice was. Mm-hmm. And was blown away by Tony Rice. Other pickers, I mean, Ricky Skaggs is a great guitarist. Vince Gill is a great guitarist. I listen to a lot of Vince Gill stuff. I can't play a lot of his, you know, licks, but I use some of the stuff that he's played and base some of the runs and, you know, maybe some break that I play, I'll try to think of, you know, some Tony Rice licks, some Vince Gill licks, some stuff I've heard Ricky Skaggs do. You know, guys like that, David Greer, guys like that who play, and just listen to what they played and try to introduce that into a break or a backup piece, something like that. Just, you know, guys who Steve Warner.
Yeah.
Outside that bluegrass realm, Steve Warner was such a great guitarist. And just listening to all that stuff and trying to pull from everybody and trying to create something, you know, that's different that most folks might not know that, wow, that lick came from, you know, a Vince Gill record that I used in a break somewhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, over bluegrass and country, those are the guys I listened to mostly growing up.
Mm-hmm. Hey, tell us about what was it like during the period where Newfound Road was getting started?
Well, we started off originally as Bluegrass Gospel and recorded 3 records, I think, as a Bluegrass Gospel group. And Tim Shelton singing is, I mean, he's one of my favorite singers in the world. Just a great, great lead singer, great baritone type, you know, lead voice. Perfect in almost everything he does. And it was great to learn to sing with him, harmonize with him, learning to phrase with him was a joy. And just, you know, I loved it. I loved it with a passion. Rob Becker was a great mandolin player. Tim Cottle was one of the best bass players I think to ever walk the planet. And it was a struggle for me at first because those guys were just great musicians. Mm-hmm. But those early years, you know, we played a lot of gospel music. And then later on, festivals were asking us, you know, man, I could put you on a Friday if you did a little bit of bluegrass. And we'd already thought about that, about introducing some, you know, regular bluegrass music into our repertoire. So we started looking for things, and Tim Cottle wrote some stuff. Rob Baker wrote some things, and we had looked at other writers and some traditional songs that we kind of revamped and put our spin on it. But after we recorded our first, I guess you'd call it secular bluegrass record, things opened up, and we began to play a lot of festivals all over the country. And I grew as a musician because of that, because of all the guys that I ran into, yourself, the aforementioned banjo players that I got to hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
It really opened up our fan base. We recorded a couple of records, had a number one song, began to do some really cool things. It was awesome. I loved the time I had with those guys.
During when I started playing with those guys a little bit, I met another guy that I think he's on the line right now. Brother Hawkins, are you there?
Hey, bad brother. It's good to be with you, Brother Jason. Hey, Brother Justin, I mean. I said that wrong. Ha! Misinterpreted, if you will. How you been doing, brother neighbor?
I've been doing just fine. And how about yourself?
Oh, I can't complain, brother. Just traveling down the old road to Brother Junior. Just jawing, if you will. Amen.
That's right.
Having a big time. Woo!
Yeah, so your dad was a preacher, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my dad. Who are you talking to now?
I'm talking to Junior now. Like, I'm glad you can.
Okay.
I'm glad you realized that and jumped back in, Junior.
Okay. Yeah, my dad was a preacher. Has been for about, gosh, now I'm getting old, about 40 years. He's pastored churches here in Central Kentucky. And, man, I grew up listening to old Baptist, missionary Baptist preachers and Pentecostal preachers and, you know, traveling up and down the road, coming home from concerts, you know, on Sunday mornings early, you'll hear preachers on the radio. So, yeah, I grew up in church and listened to a lot of different
preachers, singers.
And that's that Brother Hawkins is a funny guy, man. He's not making fun of preachers at all.
Oh no, never. But I mean, I'll do that. You know, I'll do that for Dad.
Yeah, right. No, it's really funny, man. What about some stories from the road?
Oh gosh, do we have time?
Well, do you?
You don't have enough time, brother.
I've got all.
You don't have enough time.
I've got all that.
You don't.
And my generally lasts a good while. So, but the question is to you.
Well, unfortunately, no. But I will say, Tim and Rob and Tim Cottle, Tim Shelton, Tim Cottle, man, they love to scare me. They love to just do mean things to me. We were traveling down the road one night. I was driving. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, like I said, they just love to scare me in any way possible. So we're driving down the road. I'm driving. We're listening to music. Tim Shelton's up here in the co-captain's chair, you know, co-pilot's chair. We're driving along. And it's pitch black. And somehow he and Tim Cottle, you know, we're texting one another or whatever. Tim Cottle started crawling through the floor of the van. And we're driving a 15-passenger Chevy van, so it's a pretty large vehicle. There's a lot of room between the two seats up front. So Tim Cottle just kind of, you know, sneaks his way up, and he's laying in the floor face up while I'm driving. So Tim Shelton says, "Hey, man, where's that Tony Rice CD we were listening to earlier? I'd love to hear some stuff off that." I said, it's not up here. It must be in the floor. So I put my hand in the floor to try to find it. and I hit Tim Cottle in the face. And I still don't know what it is yet, so I'm feeling around like, what in the world is that thing? So he snarls and bites at my hand, and I scream like a girl, of course, and almost run us out of the road, almost kill us. And that happened several times. They scared me. They put spiders on me, plastic spiders on me, while I was sleeping. Woke up and a plastic spider was on my face, and I jumped up and screamed like a girl, and you know, probably said some things I shouldn't have said to them. But man, they were all the time shooting me with water pistols, you know, throwing water on me.
Yeah,
just anything they could do to scare me. Just hateful, mean. Mean. I'm an old man, but they didn't care.
So now you're on the road with Newtown. How many dates a year are y'all playing?
Well, it's actually slowed down. I think year before last we did around 80.
Yeah.
last year was a lot less busy. Katie and I have a daughter. She's 2.5 now, Jessie. So she went with us from, gosh, I think the first trip we took, she was like 3 weeks old. We went to Florida.
Oh.
And she'd been with us ever since. So we didn't travel as much because of that. Katie didn't book a lot of dates. We maybe did 40 that first year with Jessie. It's steadily gone up since now she's able to stay home with my mother-in-law. She doesn't travel with us as much. So I think we have about, had 40 this year. We're in the studio a lot trying to get this record done. Next year looks to be really healthy as far as dates go. They're starting to fill up. We'll probably have about 60 to 80 dates next year. A lot of great venues, and just looking forward to going out and presenting this new record to folks. I think they're going to like the material that we chose, or that Katie chose, actually.
Yeah. And you're working with Moonstruck Management, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Josh Trivett, he's done a great job. We're working with a lady in Nashville as well, Martha Moore, who's doing our press. She's fantastic at what she's done. She's sent our record out to a lot of different magazines to be reviewed, a lot of country magazines. we have, wow, I mean, she's worked, she's got, let's see, of course, this will be over by the time this podcast is broadcast, but Friday, tomorrow, we have a long day. We have WSM Bill Cody show in the morning at 8 o'clock. That's going to be great for a bluegrasser. That sucks. Get up and try to sing at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it's pretty early.
We're doing that tomorrow morning. Then we're doing Track by Track with Kyle Cantrell at, mm-hmm. I think, 1 o'clock. And then we go to the station in, and there's a, I forget the TV show. It's on either CMT or GAC. There's a TV show coming in to do an interview at the station in with us, and then station in concert that night. Then back here in Lexington, Katie and I did a TV interview yesterday for the city release. It's just busy. It's busy, but it's great. It's a great kind of busy. I mean, we're starting to really, really pick up, and we're tickled to death. We just can't wait.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're active on social media, and you post some nice funny videos from the road from time to time and stuff like that. Tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find the band, find your new CD, your music.
You know, I had a lot of those videos on Social Cam, and now I think they're defunct. So, but I think they're still out there somewhere. I just did a lot of silly stuff where, say, if I were doing one with you, I would say, you know, this is my friend Justin Moses. He's one of the finest instrumentalists anywhere in the world. You can't beat him. And we've been around. Justin and I have played a lot of music all over the country. Justin, I'm going to ask you a question. Uh-huh. And I want you to answer this with folks, because I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I just can't grasp it. So I want to ask you, I want to get your take on this.
Okay.
You ready? You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. If a chicken and a half laid an egg and a half in a day and a half, how long would it take a cricket with a wooden leg to kick the seeds out of a dill pickle?
Oh, one day.
There you go.
Yeah, see?
One day. I wouldn't have thought of that. See, I would have thought maybe, you know, 3 days.
Yeah.
4 maybe times. But it's one day. Well, that's interesting. I didn't think about that. Folks, that's Justin Moses, and he is possibly a genius.
You know, I'm using a lot of complicated mathematical equations to figure that out, but, you know, I can do it in a pretty short amount of time, so, yeah.
See? That's what I'll just do stupid stuff like that. And folks thought it was funny. I did ask John Cowan once. I said, John, you know, I've followed your career for years, and wow, what a career you've had. But, you know, aside from the bluegrass stuff and the acoustic stuff you've done, what's it like all these years traveling and playing with Chicago?
Yeah,
because he plays with the Doobie Brothers. So, you know, just ignorant stuff like that. But, yeah, you can go on I'll be doing a lot of, like, Facebook Live videos. I know folks are really getting into that, and that's a great tool for artists to do things, social media, so folks can keep up with them. You can see some stuff there, Facebook. You can go to our Facebook page, the Newtown Band, thenewtownband.com, our website. You can go there and check out some pictures and videos and see where we're going to be. You can get our product there. You can also go, you know, iTunes. You can always go to iTunes and pick up about anything in the world. So our music will be on iTunes. If we're around and you see from the website or the Facebook page that we're going to be around in your area, come out. We'd love to see you. We're going to be out traveling quite a bit this fall. Hope to run into you. And maybe do some picking and just sit down and talk. That's been a long time since we hooked up.
Yeah, I know. We need to catch up and do a little picking.
That'd be awesome, brother.
Well, man, I thank you for your time, and I thank you for being willing to do this.
Oh, anytime you need to waste about 30 minutes, just talk.
Thanks a lot, Junior.
Brother, you're welcome. See you.
That's Junior. Junior Williams. Thanks to him and thanks to Sierra for joining me on this episode, being on this award-winning podcast, which has never won any awards. That's a Steve Austin quote there. But I appreciate you sincerely for listening to this. I would encourage you again to go to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast, if you would, and tune back in next time. I don't have a guest to advertise for the next show, but I'm working on a couple different things. Jenny Lynn Gardner is going to be on and in the next few episodes, and in talks with a few more people. So stay tuned, and you can also like the Cosmosis Facebook page. I've created a Facebook page specifically for the podcast, so I will try to keep you updated on there as well. And you can, as always, like my music page on Facebook. It's Justin Moses Music. My Twitter handle is JustinMoses2, at JustinMoses2. But I really appreciate your time. Appreciate you joining in. And I invite you to come back next time. Thanks a lot.